This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about green chemistry. But first, almost a year ago, in response to the 2000 election and the Florida fiasco, lawmakers passed legislation to upgrade the voting process. And a key provision in the Help America Vote Act earmarked nearly $4 billion for counties across the U.S. to upgrade their voting machines. And for the most part, that means taking voting into the digital era, with electronic voting machines replacing those infamous punch card ones. But is high tech necessarily the answer? Of course, it's natural to assume these days that technology holds the answers to many of our problems. We have artificial limbs, genetically modified foods, zero-emission cars, so it's not hard to find technological solutions to voting, like electronic voting machines. But how well do they work? Researchers from Caltech MIT Voting Technology Project studied the results of Florida's 2002 primary elections after electronic voting machines replaced punch card machines in seven of the state's largest counties. And they found one-third fewer errors in that election compared with previous ones. And they say that's evidence that better voting machines produce a more accurate vote. Others are not convinced. Like all high-tech devices, there's got to be some trade-off somewhere. In July, researchers in Maryland released an analysis of Diebold Election Systems' computer code for their touchscreen electronic voting machines, and they said software flaws leave that company's machines vulnerable to hacking and vote tampering. Another report released this week said that proper safeguards could reduce that risk. The state of Maryland is proceeding with plans for statewide installation of Diebold electronic voting machines. This hour, we'll talk about electronic voting and whether or not the technology is ready for widespread use. Lots of states are installing them. And what about perhaps the ultimate answer to a digital democracy? Voting via the internet. Is that an answer? Can it be far behind? If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK. And as always, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Let me introduce my guests. Douglas Jones was a member of the Iowa Election Reform Task Force and is a member of the board and past chair of the Iowa Board for Examiners for Voting Machines and Electronic Voting Systems. He's also an associate professor of computer science at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. He joins us from his office there. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi there. Guy Duncan is the Vice President of Voter Registration Services and Systems at Election Systems and Software in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he joins us by phone from Raleigh. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Glad to be here.
You're welcome. Doug Jones, tell us some of the many electronic technologies being used today for voting.
Well, I count punch cards and the optical mark sense systems and the direct recording electronic voting systems as examples of electronic voting. About the only non-electronic voting technology we have are the old lever voting machines and, of course, the semi-pre-technological voting system, paper ballots, which are counted by people. But essentially, all of the voting technologies we're talking about, the good and the bad, today, they're essentially all electronic.
How is the punch card electronic?
Oh, you may vote in the voting booth on a sheet of paper with holes in it, but it's being counted by a computer.
Mm-hmm. And what about the systems that you don't use punch cards or pull levers? Are there, how many of those systems are there out there?
Well, the optical mark sense systems where you fill in bubbles like on the standardized educational tests, those ones are widely used, and I think by the 2000 election they represented about a quarter to a third of all voters were voting on them. And the direct recording electronic voting machines that people frequently call touchscreen machines, even though some of them don't have touchscreens, those machines are the fast rising new technology today.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Guy Duncan, your company provides touchscreen voting systems. Tell us how they work.
Well, essentially, you know, election systems and software, we've been providing safe and secure election systems and equipment for 35 years. And one of those products is what we call the iVotronic, which is a touchscreen voting system. And essentially, we have that device available in a polling place, and a voter is able to activate that with a device called a personal electronic ballot. And they insert that device, and it activates the device, and then you're able to touch the screen and actually touch the candidates and access those votes. The other advantage of the technology is that it allows you to play an audio ballot. So for the handicapped community, it's also very, very effective in that if you have seen impaired, you can use the audio ballot to vote on the device. Additionally, it's very portable, and it runs off a battery. So if you have somebody who has a physical disability, they can place the device in their lap, or you can bring it to them, and they can actually vote curbside voting for a lot of people who have never been able to get into a polling place to vote.
So when I touch the screen, I send a signal that is recorded on the internal hard drive or disk drive of your machine?
Well, actually, our technology is a proprietary-based technology. It's not equipment that you can go to Best Buy and purchase. And because of that, those safeguards and the security that's built in that is built on a really extensive legacy of security that's specific for election systems. So it actually doesn't have a hard drive. Mm-hmm. It actually has, it's all embedded systems, and it actually doesn't even have an operating system. It's an embedded system that's specifically designed for voting. But essentially, that does happen. You touch on and it records how you vote on the device.
Is there any paper record generated?
There is actually, the paper record unto itself is actually quite elaborate. The existing systems that we have in place do generate a paper audit, so you can go through an opening procedure and make sure that there are, of course, no votes on the device. And then after you close your polls, you can produce a paper audit of how the votes were captured on the device. Additionally, ESNS is pioneering and working on bringing to the elections market a voter, what we call in the industry, a voter verifiable receipt, which is a device very much like what you would see as an ATM printer, which is attached to the iVotronic, which allows a voter, after they have cast their ballot on the device, for the receipt to print, and the voter to verify that, in fact, that receipt is how they voted on the device, and for that to be put into a separate ballot box.
Mm-hmm. And after I cast my vote electronically on your machine, am I asked to verify it? Do I see what it is before?
Absolutely. There's a comprehensive review screen and a review process that you go through in the interface on the touchscreen voting device. Additionally, there's a confirmation page in which you, on the screen, you're asked to verify that those were in fact your choices.
Doug Jones, what could be wrong with something like this?
Well, actually, I applaud ESNS for pursuing the voter verifiable paper audit trail. Not all vendors have been that forthcoming. The problem I have with purely electronic recording, where there's no physical record of how the vote was done, is the problem of auditing. How do you verify after the fact that the machine was honest? Now, I don't doubt that the vendors in today's markets are largely honest. For every crook out there, there are probably thousands of honest people at work. So my problem is, how do we establish a system where crooks can't find a way in later and change the rules out from under us? The current system with proprietary code provided by vendors gives us very little leverage to find out if the code is honest, and the something like the voter verified paper audit trail, which ESNS is exploring, is, I think, one way, probably the technologically simplest way, to give a decent auditability after the fact for the election.
But you're saying that there are some other electronic systems that do not provide the paper trail.
The iVotronic on the market today doesn't provide that, and the competing direct recording electronic machines, of which there are several vendors, don't provide that today, except for Avanti, which is a relatively recent startup, and for a little company in Chicago called Populex. And those are new companies in the marketplace, and I think there may be some others.
How do you ensure that your proprietary operating system is not breached or broached somehow by someone on the inside?
Well, probably Doug is better from his experience of the Board of Elections, State Board of Elections. He can probably speak to that a little bit better. But let me go back to kind of a more generalized point. ES&S with today's equipment, right? I mean, whether it's touchscreen or op-scan equipment, you know, it's incredibly secure, it's accurate, and it's reliable, right? Now, the thing that we're excited about is that under HAVA, right, with the availability that we can bring these new technologies to the market, it's an extremely exciting time that increases the ability for voters to feel confident about the voting process and to include more people in the voting process. Now, we do have solutions today that accomplish a voter verifiable receipt issue. We have optical scan-based equipment, which would allow a voter to place a paper mark on a paper ballot and to insert that into a device, which would see if they had overvoted or if there were problems with that ballot. And they could, if they elected to correct that, you could simply spoil and cast aside that one ballot and give them another one until they were satisfied with that. It captures that information electronically, but it also provides them a paper receipt. So we do have solutions today that I think very adequately satisfy those requirements.
Mm-hmm. Doug, the fact that Guy wasn't able to address your question about inside, inside security, does that worry you at all?
Well, I thought he tossed the ball into my court.
That's what I meant.
I did toss it that way.
Well, I mean, to me, that says he has no answer to that, so he's giving it to you.
No, I do have an answer, but Doug to take the first shot at it.
Doug took the shot at it. He fired the first volley.
I'll take a shot. The current system of voting system approval in the United States is a little bit Byzantine, but it has a lot of good features and I think some serious flaws. If I decided to start a voting machine company, let's call it Fly by Night Voting Incorporated, the first place I'd have to go with my new voting machine would be a federally certified independent testing authority, and I would have to convince that testing authority that my voting machine met the standards set by the Federal Election Commission for voting systems. And those standards are a whole lot better than no standards. I think they're seriously flawed, but they impose some real serious requirements that my software be inspected by a software inspector, that my hardware be shaked and baked and otherwise tested to make sure it will stand up to the abuse that happens in real polling places. And then, with that approval, I take it to the states. And each state has its own process for checking the voting systems to see if they conform to state law. Some states, it appears to be almost nothing required. Other states have their own laboratories where they do their own inspection of the system. And other states, like Iowa, are somewhere in between. We have a board of examiners, and we spend a day hacking at the machine, and we read all the documentation in the week in advance of that meeting. Mm. So that's a fair amount of testing.
Mm. All right, we're going to take a short break and come back and talk lots more about voting, electronic voting, with Guy Duncan, Vice President of Voter Registration Services and Systems at Election Systems and Software in Raleigh, and Douglas Jones, who is Associate Professor of Computer Science, University of Iowa in Iowa City. And we're going to take a call after we come back from Rush Holt, Congressman, who's introducing legislation about voting. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about voting technology. My guest, Guy Duncan, Vice President of Voter Registration Services and Systems at Election Systems and Software in Raleigh, North Carolina. Doug Jones, member of the board and past chair of the Iowa Board of Examiners for Voting Machines and Electronic Voting Systems, also Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. Our number, 1-800-989-9222. 8255. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in from Lynn. Hi, let's go to Lynn in Philly. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I've been covering this issue for the last year as a freelance journalist. My name is Lynn Landis. And, I've come to the conclusion, looking at federal law, that anything, any sophisticated technology, including the lever machine, violates federal law in that there are three steps to voting. One is selecting your candidate, and that should be concealed. That should be secret. That should be private. The other two steps, though, casting your vote and counting of the vote, should be very observable, and any kind of technology violates that right. So that, you know, no matter who controls the technology, whether it's government or private corporations, that really violates your right to an observable process.
Any reaction from my guests?
Well, I would respond. This is Guy Duncan. With the specific equipment that we provide, as it applies to each state's laws, those three steps are represented within the process of the voting system. And typically, it involves pretty intense involvement associated with a canvassing board to review and to certify those votes that have been cast within an election. Now, how each state manages that canvassing board and how each jurisdiction manages that, there's a lot of differences there. But it gets back to the fact that, you know, we are a republic and each state gets to set their own individualized election laws for how votes are delivered.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, thanks for calling.
I'd like to comment on that.
Yes, go ahead.
I think that Lynn has pointed out a very serious problem, and the answer from Guy Duncan actually reinforces that. State standards, I think there's a serious problem with those, and if you look at the report that Stanford SAIC, Science Applications International, Inc., came out with just late last week, on the security of the Diebold election system in Maryland. That report, although it was quite critical of the Diebold direct recording electronic voting machine, was also extremely critical of the way that the elections were being administered in Maryland. It was extremely critical of the degree of oversight that the polling places had in Maryland. And most of the criticisms that I saw in that report, in fact, apply to most of the states. I think our states have a lot of house cleaning to do and have to tighten up their regulations on their voting systems considerably and on the administration of elections.
Let's talk about those. Can you give us some more details on those criticisms?
Oh, the pre-election testing, for example. I'll pass on a criticism I got from Geneva, Switzerland, where they use internet voting. And a comment from the election director there is they made a big mistake with pre-election testing because although the test is very public, plenty of observers from the opposing parties are present when they run their pre-election tests. It's as good as voodoo. A technician sits down at the terminal, types things into the terminal, turns around and says, "See, it passed the test." And as far as the observers are concerned, it's an utter mystery what was actually tested and what was actually accomplished by this ritual. I think that's a very dangerous situation to get into, and I think most of our computer-based voting technologies, including all the way back to, actually not computer-based, even the old punch card machines, lever voting machines, the century-old technology we have for counting votes, suffers a bit from this problem. They're really, really hard to test, and it's really hard for an observer to determine whether the test was actually meaningful. I think that's a very serious criticism of not only the new voting technologies, but the old ones.
So how do you fix that?
Well, one way you can fix it is what ES&S has done specifically in the United Kingdom for the Office of the Deputy Prime Minister in multi-channel voting, in that you bring to bear not just one technology platform to a jurisdiction, you bring a multitude of technologies together. And additionally, you provide some super, super high levels of encryption that basically secure and authenticate that ballot and that information all the way through the system. And that part of that key, right, to look at that data rests with the stakeholders who are part of that audit process. So therefore, no one inside the system can essentially see what's happening with the ballots. Therefore, what Doug was pointing out associated with some type of collusion on the inside or faith that the system is working correctly, the process within the software, the process within the security, the process within the overall architecture, is that the result itself cannot be manipulated, and you can verify that through a distributed method of authentication.
But if no one can, if you have proprietary software and no one can see inside what's going on, doesn't that leave you open to criticism? Whereas if you had open software and open standards and the whole world can pick and get in there and see what flaws and deficiencies might exist, that makes for a much more trustable system.
Absolutely. I mean, from our perspective, with our proprietary systems, in terms of our code being available for review under the existing federal standards, but bringing to bear, just on the technology side, bringing to bear open standards of using things like Linux, using things like Java, and using code bases that in that environment, assuming that that environment is dictated to us, right, or we have a ability to go there, that you have the ability to share that information and to have public scrutiny, and so you increase overall confidence within the systems. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Doug, any comment?
Well, I agree, although the pure open source model may have problems in the voting domain. One of the big problems we have with voting systems is making sure that the software that's in the voting system is precisely the version which has been tested and inspected. And it's very hard to assure that using a pure open source development methodology where anyone can grab a copy of the code and augment it and change it. So voting software needs extremely tight control over its modification and distribution. I think that, in fact, we have plenty of evidence that today many jurisdictions, even when state laws require that the voting software they run be certified by the Federal Election Commission or the laboratories authorized by the FEC to do certification, there are many jurisdictions where they say, well, okay, you can install that patch because we really want that patch and we can't afford to wait for certification. That's happening out in the field because of really lax control over revision control and lax attention to the revision control issue by the county election authorities.
Mm-hmm. Let me bring in another guest, a congressman who is no stranger to Science Friday, Congressman Rush Holt, who is a Democrat from New Jersey and a former assistant director at Princeton Plasma Physics Lab in Hopewell. Welcome back to Science Friday, Congressman.
Ira, it's always good to talk with you.
Now, I understand that you've introduced a bill that would change the Help America Vote Act that would require all the machines to produce an actual paper record.
That's right. I mean, so many people came to me, constituents, saying that they want reliability and verifiability in their voting. And, you know, people kept very passionate about this, about the sanctity of their vote. And so listening to them, I realized that these electronic machines are inherently, fundamentally unverifiable. They have advantages. They're speedy and efficient and reliable. You know, I had an experience a few years ago in an election where the local clerk just added the numbers wrong. And for some hours in the evening, it looked like the election had gone to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So this gets away from those problems, but it introduces the problem of unverifiability. So my legislation would require that each voting machine have something like was described before, like Mr. Duncan described, where each voter would get to see a hard copy, a paper record of what the vote was, and the voter can say, yep, that's my vote. And then that paper would go into a secure deposit, either within the machine or separately, and be kept with the same security that your jurisdiction keeps all of its voting records. And that would be the vote of record should there be a recount. You know, what troubles voters, I think, what I hear about is they leave the machine. They don't really have any way of knowing that it did what they intended for it to do. I heard one example of where over the course of the day, the image on the screen drifted. So if it was a touch screen, you know, when you think you're voting for A, you might actually be voting for B. Well, you know, when the test was done before the drift occurred, it might look, you know, just fine. And a receipt at the, I mean, a printout at the end of the day, this record that so many of the manufacturers say they can produce, you know, it says, well, there were 50 votes for candidate A and 27 for candidate B. It will always say that. And there's no way to independently verify that there were 50 voters who wanted to vote for A, mm-hmm. tried to vote for A, intended to vote for A, and 27 who, you know, tried to vote for B. You don't know. And so a paper record would, I think, be very reassuring to voters. And, you know, we have a problem in the United States with skepticism, cynicism, lack of trust in government and the process of government. Mm-hmm. And we have to do everything we can to restore that.
How? Well, let's talk about the bill. What's it going to cost? The not the bill legislation, but the bill, the price we may have to pay. And can we afford to change to those machines?
Well, I mean, I guess the real question is, can we afford to have a voting system that the public is not completely confident is reliable and verifiable? But, you know, how much does a printer cost on a machine? I think any of these manufacturers, you know, if there are 100,000 or 50,000 or 20,000 jurisdictions around the country that will be choosing this kind of system, an electronic machine with a paper ticket, they could, for, you know, not too many tens of dollars or perhaps hundreds of dollars more, but probably tens of dollars more, develop something like that for each machine. Now, the optical scan that was discussed earlier, where the voter marks a paper ballot, which is read electronically, meets all of these without any new technology at all. This is, you know, on the market immediately
right
now. And it provides the speed and efficiency and reliability, these advantages of an electronic machine, and it also provides verifiability. And, of course, the verifiability belongs to the voter. It is the voter who should do the verification, not a remote manufacturing company or anyone else.
Does the legislation require that if you got a paper receipt and you saw that it was wrong, you could destroy that vote and recast your vote?
Yes. And obviously how that would be done would vary from machine to machine and jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But, you know, that happens now in a polling place. If you have a spoiled ballot, it's one of the jobs of the election officials is to invalidate a spoiled ballot and give the voter a new ballot.
Mm. Well, so where does your bill stand? Will it be ready, passed by 2004 for that election year?
Well, you know, let me tell you the real problem here is I'm afraid, as I have about 40 or 50 co-sponsors on this now, I looked at it the other day, and they were all Democrats. And I'm afraid that Republicans out there somehow have the mistaken impression that this is, I don't know, payback for Florida or something like that. And they are staying away from it. I think, and of course, if we don't have Republicans backing this, it won't pass.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason why this should be partisan in the least. Anyone who's interested in American democracy should want a voting system that is reliable and verifiable. And, it is not just that Democrats want that and Republicans don't. There's some other reason why Republicans are not co-sponsoring this.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Holt, thank you very much for joining us.
Sure. Good to talk with you, Ira.
Yes. Rush Holt is a U.S. representative from New Jersey and former assistant director. He's a physicist at the Princeton Plasma Physics Laboratory in Hopewell. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Doug Jones and Guy Duncan. Any comments? Let me ask you, Doug, any comments about that bill?
Well, I agree with it. I agree that voter verifiable audits are extremely important. I suspect there may be other auditing models that I would accept that aren't based on paper. And I'll tell you about the most promising one I've seen is a proposal from NetApp, which is a Dutch company that makes voting systems for countries like Ireland and Germany and Belgium. The NetApp auditing model is a really clever model where you use a direct recording electronic voting machine and the auditing team picks a precinct at random on the morning of the election before the polls open and arrives to audit that precinct. And what they do is they substitute a prepared voting machine for one of the ones that was previously delivered to that precinct. They pull the machine out of service in that precinct, and for the duration of the election day, while voters are voting in the real election, they invite voters, would you help us test this machine by casting a ballot on it while we take notes? And then at the end of the day, they compare the totals out of the machine with the results of their notes. That's a really interesting model, but of course it's expensive. You've got this team of auditors who descend on the precinct, and you've got this team of all these voters have to cooperate with the test. But I think that's a price we should be willing to pay. We're either going to pay for it in printers, or we're going to pay for it in a much more intense model of auditing for the machines that don't have printers. Democracy isn't cheap.
Mm-hmm. Guy Duncan, can you supply the kind of machine that Congressman was talking about?
Yes, we can. We could provide that to the market. One thing I do want to emphasize that is a huge benefit of existing touchscreen voting systems is the ability for them to include the handicapped community in the voting process. With the introduction of what we call a receipt printer to a device, there's some technology issues there of how do you print a receipt for someone who cannot see. And those are technology challenges that we need to meet, but we don't want to try to disenfranchise. We've made great progress in including under HAVA and with innovative products to include a much larger group of people in the voting process, and new technologies do that. With this, we don't want to disenfranchise them once again because we're making progress in that direction.
Doug, I got about 1 minute left. You were decrying the problems of Internet voting. We don't expect that to happen very soon.
Well, it's happening right now in Geneva, Switzerland. They have a multimodal voting system where you can vote by internet, or you can vote on a paper ballot at the polling place, or you can mail in your ballot. And it's doable. The only question is, do we want to do it? I think it combines all of the potential risks of direct recording electronic voting machines with all of the risks we know are there for postal voting, where your boss says, I want you to fill out your ballot in my office as a condition of keeping your job, or something like that.
All right, well, we're going to have to get into that. We've run out of time. I'd like to thank both of you for joining us. Guy Duncan, Vice President of Voter Registration Services and Systems at Election Systems and Software in Raleigh. Doug Jones, Associate Professor of Computer Science at University of Iowa and Iowa City. Thank you both. We'll be right back after the short break. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday, from NPR News.